Why don't I just go ahead and make some opening comments and welcome everyone for joining us here today. This is our first BC Open Ed Chat of 2014, and we're really excited to have our speakers today and just sort of engage. If you haven't joined one of these chats before, they're intended to be pretty informal and fun. You know, and we sort of say, if you have questions, please go ahead and jump in and ask questions, or if there's any updates or projects you want to do, definitely there'll be time for that as well. Basically, the goal of these is just to have a sort of ongoing series on the discussions and ongoing series and discussions on the state of and progress of open education in British Columbia, and to hear about some of the cool stuff going on and sort of chat through what are some of the issues and commonalities that we're all experiencing. You know, one sort of thing I would just ask today, if you're not speaking, if you want to go ahead and mind muting your mic. We've, in the last discussion, I think, had a lot of feedback. And there's a mute button on the left-hand side. Ryan, did you want to add anything?
At this point, not too much, other than thanking everyone for coming. And just to kind of give an outline of what we intend to talk about today, it was through a blog post that Clint wrote on his blog that we learned about Rajiv. And I'm a bit embarrassed to say, because Rajiv actually, I believe, is an Open Learning faculty member. In addition to his role at Capilano, he also does some online teaching with TRU. And I've heard wonderful things about him here, so it's nice to make his acquaintance virtually. So in addition to kind of talking about kind of the success story that Clint shared on his blog, I'm hoping that we'll get a bit of an update on where things are at with the Open Textbook Project. And I see we've got a number of institutions represented here. So if people want to chime in with questions or updates on that front, we can do that. And we'll see how long that conversation goes organically. And if we have time at the end, I know some people have been asking a little bit about the Open Educational Resources Universitas, as it's been renamed. And we had the official launch for that here at TRU just before the holidays. So I would be happy to give just a quick overview of what happened at the meeting and where things go from there. And if we have time, well, there's other things you can talk about as well. And it's great to see everyone who's come along to join the Open Chat. And we hope either the listening isn't too painful and or that you find reason to jump in, as well noted. So with that, Will, did you have anything else to add before we turn it over to Clint?
No, that's perfect. I would say, Clint, if you want to go ahead and take it away.
Cool. Great. First off, I'm just going to see, Rajiv, are you there? I see you're in the listeners box. Do you have audio? Oh, I can't seem to hear Rajiv. Oh, and he's... like he's gone. Okay.
Like he's dropped off. There is
That's all right.
There is a toll-free number in the chat window. If someone wants to just email Rajiv that number if he's having difficulty with his head setup.
Yeah, Rajiv, if you can see on the right-hand side in the chat, there is a number there that you can call, and that will get you into a conference bridge if you're having problems with your headset.
Can you hear me now? Is this better?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
You got you. Great. Well, I just wanted to make sure you had audio. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for the Open Ed Chat here today. I thought maybe I'd just start off by, before I get into talking to Rajiv here, and he can share his story around open textbooks, just give you an update on some of the milestones of the Open Textbook Project that's happening here in the province. Some of you may have noticed this week that we have just released phase three, our call for proposals, and we're looking to, in phase three, fund the creation of open textbooks that we don't have in our collection yet, things we haven't found yet. So, and sort of the big subject areas are criminology, anthropology, visual arts, media and design, and political science. There's a few other subject areas in there, but we have just released that, and the deadline for applications for that round of funding is February 28th. And like the previous OPDF funding, we're really looking for cross-institutional projects, so encouraging some collaboration back and forth between institutions. As part of that creation of new textbooks for scratch, some of you have been following some of my rambling blog posts lately. We're looking at doing a possible textbook sprint in the Lower Mainland in Vancouver in June around ETUG time. And what this is we're looking at bringing together a group of faculty in a subject area in a discipline and doing a really intense face-to-face session over the course of 3 days, 2 or 3 days, and try to bang out a textbook in a couple of days in a subject area. And we're just working with some of the articulation committees to figure out the subject area for that. But that's kind of an innovative project. I've been following a couple of projects around the world that have done that. There was one at University of Otago in New Zealand. There's another one, Siavula in South Africa does this on a regular basis. So I've been talking to a few of those folks, getting some ideas on how and if we can pull this off to create a textbook in a couple of days. We have 5 more textbooks going on the site in the next week for geography, applied sciences, earth and ocean sciences, and a couple of business books in commerce and organizational behavior. We found those that will bring up our total to 34 textbooks in the collection. 18 of those we have faculty reviews for. And Mary, I see you're on here too. I think we've got, is it 4 more books that are currently being reviewed? I think it's 4 more books that are currently under review. And we're always looking for faculty to review existing open textbooks. That's kind of an ongoing call for proposals we have. open.bccampus.ca, you'll see call for proposals in the top right-hand corner if anybody's interested in reviews. We've got our print-on-demand service up and running with SFU, so students who are using open textbooks can now get printed copies. On the adaptation front, we've got a couple of adaptation projects on the go. We've taken the reviews of textbooks from that first round that we did, and we're using those to Canadianize a couple of textbooks. We've got an Introduction to Psychology textbook that Jen Walenga at Royal Roads University is just in the process of adapting. So we'll make some changes to that, add some new content, make it a little bit more Canadian, and then release it back. We also have an Introduction to Sociology textbook. Bill Little, who I believe is also at TRU and UVic, is working on that textbook. We have Nelson Ng at Douglas expanding the database design textbook that was created by Adrian Watt, also at Douglas. So those are adaptation projects that we have on the go. What else? We brought on Lori Aesop. So we brought some help on as this thing kind of scales up a bit. We've realized we need some more help with the operationalizing of it and supporting faculty as we get more faculty developing textbook. We're kind of getting to the stage where we're looking now for editors and other people to help support the faculty in writing and adapting textbooks. So Lori's been brought on board to take on that role. Adaptations, you might have saw the press release that came out from the ministry last week showing that in the fall we saved students about $43,000 with the adoptions that had happened at Kwantlen, at Douglas, Northwest, and Capilano, which we're just going to talk with Rajiv here in just a moment. And I'd urge anybody who's listening right now, if you know of any adaptations at your institution, please tell us. We don't have a lot of sophisticated metrics to track the usage and adaptations and adoptions. Because it's an open project, really anybody can take it. We don't even ask for an email address when people download it. So a lot of times we may just kind of hear, my colleague at this institution or this person over here is doing it. So if you pass that information on to us, that would be greatly appreciated. So those are kind of like the big highlights. And just before I bring Rajiv on, we can chat a little bit about his project. I'll just stop and see if anybody has any questions about that, the big fire hose I just gave you right there about the project.
Clint, you mentioned the textbook sprint. Is that still kind of in the logistic phase, or do you have a topic or potential participants in mind for that?
It's still in putting it together. I want to talk to Siavula, which I'm going to be doing next week in South Africa. And I just had a meeting yesterday with another person named Adam Hyde, who actually runs these and facilitates these book sprints, about his process. It still is. I'd say in the next probably 2 weeks, we'll start nailing it. And, you know, looking for participants in this. Once we get the subject area down, and I'm really working on one particular subject area to see if there's value in going down here and if we can find some faculty through the articulation committee. What we need to do right now is we have these really broad subject areas, and in order for us to really create something useful out of this book sprint, I want to make sure that we have an exact subject area targeted that's going to be useful, has wide transferability throughout the province in terms of courses, and something that's a useful resource. So I'm hoping to announce something, I don't know, next week, 2 weeks, once I get those details firmed up. But right now it's looking like around ETUG in Vancouver is when we'll do the event.
Okay. I just have one other question on your preamble. Is you mentioned the print-on-demand service. Can you give any indication of what sort of prices? I mean, obviously different books have different needs and just even sheer number of pages and things like that. But let's say there was a 300-page textbook. Any sense of what the price for a student would be?
Yeah, we've got the prices down quite reasonable, especially because we've given the option of doing a black and white version of a textbook or a color version of the textbook. And I think for most of the textbooks, to get a black and white version of, you know, a $400 or $500 or 400 or 500 page textbook is around $25 to $30. It gets a little bit more expensive if you start moving into color. I've got the breakout. The exact prices I had posted on the open website, and if you just give me a second here, as we're talking, I can pull that up. But it's pretty reasonable.
Post the link in the chat.
And the other thing we're tracking with the open with the print on demand piece is actually how many students do print on demand. Be interested to see that, because you know some of the stats show. A lot of students will use printed textbooks, but if there's a free version of the textbook, that number drops dramatically, and students are pretty happy with the electronic versions of the textbook. So hoping to do a little bit of research around that and track the metrics of how many people and how many students actually use the printed versions. Any other questions? All right. So I want to introduce Dr. Rajiv Jinjani from Capilano. And this is a really cool story. And I wrote a blog post in December about this because Rajiv had come on board with the Open Textbook Project as a reviewer and had brought us a textbook. And had reviewed the textbook, and then when I ran into Rajiv at BCAT Jam, the BC Articulation Committee Jam, that happened last fall in Vancouver, and we talked a little bit, and a couple of weeks later I get an email from him saying, I've Canadianized this textbook, and I've adapted it and adopted it, and posted it on my website, and now it's available for anybody to download and use. And I was like, wow, really? Like, someone did this completely outside of, really outside the project, had just taken it upon himself, a faculty had taken it upon themselves to just take the textbook, modify it, adapt it, and then release it back with a Creative Commons license. And I thought that was fantastic. It was just what we had really hoped would happen with this project. We have some of the formal pieces going on, the adaptation projects and things like that, but Rajiv really just sort of took the bull by the horns and off he went. So Rajiv, I've got to ask you, like, where did the inspiration come to get involved with the Open Textbook Project?
Well, first of all, hello everyone. I'm sort of laughing over here because I'm wondering who this wonderful person is who you keep describing. but it's great to be here and I didn't even know about these chats until recently. So thank you, and thanks to you and Brian for introducing me and for writing that blog post, which it's amazing how quickly that spread across the internet and where that led to. But to answer your question, TRU. I started as an OLFM with TRU in May, and it was literally a couple of weeks into starting to work with TRU Open Learning that they had an OLFM workshop in at Kamloops at their campus. They invited someone who I'm imagining many of you know, David Wiley, to give a keynote speech. And David's, of course, a real pioneer when it comes to the open education movement in the United States, particularly in Utah, but also beyond, I think. But and it was listening to him talk that I really started to get a sense of the rationale for the open education movement, MOOCs, but much beyond in terms of resources being open. And I think it was probably in the middle of his talk when I learned about how, at this point at least, the total amount of student loan debt in North America outstrips the credit card debt in North America. That's sort of a statistic that hit home for me. You know, obviously, as an instructor, I do see a lot of students and more working, not just part-time, but full-time. And of course, the financial savings was something that was hard to ignore. And so it was a sort of a happy sort of coincidence that at the same time that I heard David Wiley talk, I think it was around that time that the call for phase one for the Open Textbook Project went out from BC campus. And at the same time, of course, the Psychology Articulation Committee itself met, and we talked about the open education movement and the Open Textbook Project in particular at that table as well. So in psychology, I don't remember who pointed this out, but we have a few options. There were already three textbooks or open textbooks that were available, two of which BC campus had identified, and a third which I was aware of, which I brought to their attention. So where it began is I applied to participate in phase one as a reviewer, and I asked if I could review two. One was for social psychology, and the other one was the research methods in psychology that I found. And of course, they happily agreed, and so I did that. And so there's a lot more to the tale, of course, but at least in terms of phase one of the project, I was certainly a formal participant and wrote those, reviewed the books, and those reviews are published, obviously, in the where the repository is, where the books are stored on BC Campus's server. So that was the first phase. Beyond that, I of course knew that I would be teaching research methods courses in the fall of 2013, and I saw it as a sort of a perfect opportunity. I had a few weeks to spare in the summer. Well, I think most people call that vacation time, but I thought I would take the time to implement what I thought were the changes that needed to be made to bring the textbook up to scratch. And in some cases, it was updates in terms of research and best practices that have been that have changed. In other cases, it was rewriting a chapter. So, for example, research ethics, when you cross the border, it changes drastically depending on whether you're following United States federal policy or the Canadian Tri-Council policy. So the revision required some substantial work, some minor work, and a lot of additional details like missing table of contents, missing cover, just in terms of making navigation through the book easier, it needed a little work. And so I tried my best and tried to find, like an image for the cover, for example, that also fit the Creative Commons license that we could use. And I decided I would upload it to the course website for my students in the fall. So the fall comes around and my students come in, and I keep telling people I'll never forget the look on their faces on that first day, because they've been visiting the bookstore. They've been trying to figure out where do they get this book from. They come to class, and I try to explain to them that I start to explain to them that the book is already on their course website. It's as a PDF file. They can download it. They can print it if they wish. And of course, they were delighted. They were amazed and quite grateful, which was, I suppose, the point. Beyond that, I made them quite aware that they were, in many ways, guinea pigs in a bit of an experiment. excuse me, I've got a bit of a frog in my throat. And so I made them aware that I would be coming back to them periodically through the semester, and certainly at the end of the semester, I would be interested in collecting and gathering their feedback on what their experience would be was like. How comfortable they were reading it, did they notice that they were reading it more or less relative to a traditional textbook, what was it like, how many of them chose to print a copy, what was the cost of them printing it, and this of course predated the agreement with SFU. So we used the textbook, and for my money it worked extremely well. In terms of performance on the course, no different than a traditional section, so I don't see that it negatively impacted their performance. Not that this is a controlled experiment by any means, but I did not hear any major concerns. And if there were concerns, the concerns seemed to be outweighed by the benefits as far as the students were concerned. So from my perspective, it was quite a successful little experiment. And that, of course, led me to continue to adopt it in the present semester with the next cohort of students. But just in terms of simple calculation, the traditional most popular textbook for research methods in psychology that's widely used in the lower mainland, it's published by McGraw-Hill, it's authored by a guy called Paul Cosby, and they have a new Canadian edition out as well. And that costs upwards of $120. It's a soft cover textbook, it's black and white, there's nothing fancy about it at all. Which makes it, in my mind, harder to justify that price tag. But you know, if you look at that across the size of the class I had, just that one class saved about $5,700. And so collectively, of course, it seemed like a very worthwhile endeavor. There's a few other things I could mention briefly, and then, of course, if anybody has questions about my experience. One is, of course, Clint, who's just astonishing, and of course I'm sure many of you who are participating over here are sort of have a sense of how unbelievable this individual is. He wrote this blog post which incredibly went viral, and it's led to this wonderful chain reaction. Positive publicity, of course, through the ministry, but also online. I posted a PDF version of the textbook on my personal WordPress website, but I also posted a DocX version. So of course, other people can also remix it further, adapt it further to suit their purposes. And over the last little while, I can tell you that that book has been downloaded in DocX format in the United States, Germany, the United Kingdom, the Republic of South Korea, obviously, Australia, Hong Kong, Turkey, Thailand, Brazil, South Africa, Spain, the Czech Republic, and New Zealand. Oh, and Finland. Let's not forget Finland. So that was a huge shock as far as I was concerned. I was also contacted directly by faculty members, including someone at the University of Hawaii, who notified me over the Christmas break that he was eager for the editable version of my book to be posted because he wanted to adopt it for his class for this present semester. So in terms of the ripple effect, I certainly didn't see this coming. I imagine Clint might have, but I've been thrilled to see this that this is useful and this is actually helping people around the place. Closer to home, I can tell you that so far we have all of the sections for research methods at Capilano University, the psychology courses are using this book. There's also research methods courses in music therapy at Capilano that are also now committed to using that book. So my personal plan moving forward is to obviously integrate some of the feedback I've collected or I will collect across two semesters from students, along with changes to the discipline itself, and revise the book further this summer. And of course, beyond, I think, the major cost savings to students, I think one of the significant advantages from a faculty member's point of view is the ability to revise it so much faster than the traditional review cycle of a traditional textbook. You know, over the last year, there have been major developments in terms of best practices for pre-registering hypotheses, uploading data when you publish an article, and various other methodological practices within my field. And all of those have only taken place over the last 6 months. So, no textbook currently has that information in it, those best practices explained. And I'm hoping that this summer, this coming summer, those the book will be updated to reflect those. So, happy accidents along the way. And the only other thing I'll say is just to sort of again point out that as an OL fan at TRU, I've also I can echo what about the administration really being interested in backing the adoption of open textbooks, and certainly I think that I suspect that research methods in psychology will be certainly an option. That's a course I teach at TRU OL as well, but there are obviously others, including perhaps courses that other faculty at TRU are working on revisions for. The thing that maybe makes life for my students the easiest is obviously the development, the negotiation between BC Campus and SFU's print shop that allows the print-on-demand option. And I can tell you my textbook, people were asking about cost earlier. This is just one example. The textbook is 380 pages long, and the black and white option for my students is $13, 1-3. And if they elect to have a color copy, it's $39. And then I think there's another $10 in shipping. So, sorry, that's a very long ramble, but that's a bit of a sense of my journey so far. Again, I can't stress enough, the major work was really done by a fellow called Paul Price, who teaches at University of California at Fresno, who authored the US edition. I've certainly piggybacked on his work, and then hopefully others will do the same. So, don't know who wants to take over at this point.
Rajiv, it's Clint here. It's a wonderful story. I had no idea about the reach, actually. I saw the conversation going on your WordPress site with the person, I believe it was in Hawaii, asking for the copy, but I had no idea that that it had that kind of global impact. That's really fantastic to hear.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to say that I thought was really great about your adoption of the textbook is how you were very explicit with your students at the beginning that, hey, we're trying something new. This is going to be a bit of an experiment in the class. And certainly, you know, for them, not having to outlay a big bunch of cash must have been obviously the nice piece about it. But the fact that you were explicit about it too and telling them that, you know, we're gonna try something new, I think is a really good way to go and a good strategy when trying to introduce something new to students.
Thank you. I mean, no, I mean, it seems like the obvious thing to do. I mean, not the least of which is because they were sort of trying to come to grips with, no, but are you serious? That kept coming back. So. So you know, we had to sort of talk about how we might use it, and certainly there are. At least in my class, there were a fair number who still felt comfortable having a printed copy with them. And in those cases, I suggested that, you know, while they were free to print the entire book and maybe put it in a binder if they chose to, of course, they could print individual chapters as they went along to see if they really needed it. And even though the book does have colored graphs in it, I've never suggested that students print it in color because, of course, they have the colored PDF. So if there's ever any confusion, that's an easy reference for them. But moving forward, I think just to make things even easier, I think it would be more sensible for me to make sure that in the next revision, that all of the graphs in the book are illustrated. The color scheme is such that if it's printed in black and white, it's still very clear which categories are the same and which categories are different. So it's a learning process, but thanks for the feedback.
Rajiv, I'm wondering, you had mentioned that some of your colleagues at the institution at Capilano are looking at adopting this for other courses. Have you guys had any discussions about taking on the editing of it as a possible collaborative project within the department?
Your timing is impeccable. This is a conversation we had yesterday. So for research methods, we don't have very many sections, and I teach all of the sections for research methods. So in a de facto sense, that's already a project that's under control. What we're talking about right now is a collaborative effort to edit, adapt, and then again publish online The open text that was reviewed by, I forget, five or six people, including myself, for social psychology. So that's a project that we're talking about. And hopefully if that moves forward, that's something I think we'll plan to do over this summer. And there would be at least three of us involved in that project. Hello?
Well, it's a wonderful story, Rajiv. Thank you very much for sharing it. Does anybody else have any questions for Rajiv about the process, maybe about how technically challenging did you find it to take someone else's work and modify it?
Technically, not very challenging at all. I mean, there was the work was maybe at different levels. There's sort of the big picture work where you're thinking about, as a reviewer, what really needs to be changed to make this the best textbook it could be. And I must say, it was starting from a very good place. Full credit to Paul Price. He wrote a book that was very current, that was had excellent coverage, and that used extremely good pedagogical strategies. I mean, the explanations were great, the relatables were great, and they were not particularly culture specific, which was excellent. So we're starting from a good place, but technically, I suppose the learning curve for me was dealing with the whole Creative Commons license, trying to figure that out and figure out what version of Creative Commons I should be using and how to integrate that information when I publish it. Trying to do the same in terms of just something as simple as an image, a nice image on the cover. I mean, it, just because it's online and just because it's free doesn't mean it has to be dull. And it didn't seem to be a lot of work to put that together. Other details like, you know, creating a table of contents and so on. I mean, as long as you're comfortable editing things and creating a table of contents and using some of the features in a product like Microsoft Word, it wasn't very challenging at all. So I would say, yeah, it's maybe the Creative Commons bit, but at least in terms of what I was comfortable using, it was incredibly simple, very, very easy to use. I suppose, trying to think, in some cases, it might be useful to be able to, I mean, I could have reached out to get help in terms of if there are links, if there are URLs that certain pages in the course, in the textbook points to, like, for example, pointing students to the Tri-Council's online tutorial for ethics, research ethics. That requires, you know, actually showing, giving them the URL if they ever want to go there, or if their instructor asks them to go there. And, you know, I haven't found a way yet to, you know, make that directly clickable when I convert it to a PDF file, for example. But overall, technically pretty easy.
Rajiv, I have a question. I mean, one of the things that strikes me about your story and listening to you talk about it is just kind of how matter-of-factly, you know, you just went about it. You know, you became aware of the approach, you identified a text, and you went to work. And maybe you can help unlock something that's been a bit of a puzzle for me, that we haven't seen more adoption and adaptation of open textbooks across the academy. And I know that speaking to some faculty who say they're interested, they've referred to friction or skepticism from peers or even from administration. I don't want you to say anything that'll get you in trouble, but I wonder if you experienced any of that, and if so, how you dealt with it. Maybe I'll leave it at that, and I have a follow-up that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's controversial to talk about this, because this is a relatively new thing, and especially I think for many faculty, many more, I would suggest that most faculty are not even aware of the existence of the open education movement. They've heard about MOOCs, but that's about it. So, I mean, one is just education, sort of explaining that these products exist. The first question I usually get is, But why would someone spend that kind of effort and energy if you're not going to get royalties? And it's sometimes really difficult for me. Well, it's not sometimes. It's often hard to explain the many, many, many reasons why someone might want to invest energy and their time into a project like this. Whether it's you know, out of a sense of moral obligation to their students. And I know when I'm talking about morality, maybe that's a bit lofty, but At this point, I think that's how I feel, that if you do have an extremely high quality textbook that's current, that in terms of its pedagogical value is indistinguishable from a traditional textbook, except that the students are saving a significant amount of money, then I don't see how you could ethically still lie in bed with the publishers in that sense. I don't see the benefit. Says, all right, so if you tell me that open textbooks can be of high quality, and I'm not suggesting that all open textbooks necessarily are, but I have seen some that are excellent. So if the quality is as good or perhaps even better, given the fact that you can adapt it and revise it faster, then the question becomes, well, what about ancillaries? And to me, that's one of the bigger barriers here. Most traditional textbooks come along packaged with things like test banks, and that's probably the biggest one of the lot. Nobody really cares for PowerPoint slides that accompany textbooks, but the test bank is critical for many, many faculty members. And so, you know, adopting an open textbook essentially means that the faculty will have to take on the job of writing a whole number of questions from scratch, writing original exam questions. And, you know, for large sections, especially courses that are largely multiple choice based, this is a big commitment. It's a lot of work. So I think that's a huge hurdle. It's something that I suspect BC Campus will have to think about, or maybe they've already done this. Maybe the ministry will have to fund a separate venture to produce ancillaries. But I think that once that barrier is navigated, then perhaps it's just a question of, you know, people looking at the books, recognizing how high the quality is or can be. That's probably it. But to go back to the first barrier, and it's just this whole notion of sometimes it's hard to explain to somebody why someone would do this for free. And B, even if they start to believe you, they're all right, you're saying that somebody would do this for free. But if it's for free, how good could the quality be, is the assumption they make. So they start doubting quality simply because it's given away for free. So I think it's attitude change. I think it's certainly not for everyone. There are people who are very comfortable with traditional textbooks for a variety of reasons, including the ancillaries that come packaged with them. They tailor their courses to a particular textbook, for example, and they're very happy with the way the course is designed. But for people who are open to it, I think it can be an extremely valuable option. I think at this point, I see my job as just sort of talking more about it to my fellow faculty members. I think as people see that people who they know in the academic community, people who they work with or who they perhaps have a working relationship with, they see that these people are using it, they're adapting it, they're adopting it, this will perhaps start to slowly breed some confidence in this approach. Certainly that's what led to music therapy at Capilano adopting it, and that's what's going to lead to, I think, social psychology take the same route.
A follow-up, but I think you actually anticipated and addressed it in your answer, so thanks for that. And again, I just want to thank you for sharing your story, besides your really remarkable work, and it's really encouraging to hear about the uptake, especially in the global sense. What a incredibly lucid and awesome advocate you are. So it's really great to hear you tell your story.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. But again, I can't say this enough. People often confuse the fact that I've revised a book with the fact that I've authored a book. The major credit over here really, really, really should go to Paul Price, who wrote the book, who published it under that Creative Commons license in the first place. And who, by the way, I tried to contact. I know I didn't need to contact him when I wanted to revise it because of the license, but I sent him an email saying, listen, this is what I'm planning on doing, creating this Canadian edition. I hope you're comfortable with it. Please let me know. I mean, sadly, I never heard from him, but I still felt some fun, you know, an obligation to. But major credit to him, I think, in the first place. And then, of course, you know, just to everything that BC Campus has been doing to whether it's facilitating tie-ins for the print-on-demand option with SFU or posting it online for the repository, making other people aware of it. So, you know, again, I really don't want to overstate my role over here. Yeah, I've quite enjoyed the process.
Thanks, and this is Will at UBC, and I just wanted to follow up on one little point that I think you hit very well, and thank you for that amazing story. But I loved your comment about the question of why would you do this for free, because I think that's a question that gets asked of people working in open ed all the time. What is the motivation for doing this? Why would you publish this resource for free? And I think you really spoke to that quite well.
Yeah, the only other thing I'll maybe add is one of the easier ways in which maybe sometimes traditional minded faculty members can understand the motivation is if I frame it, which it truly is, it's a service to students, but it's also a service to the discipline. And we talk about the nature of education and one of the premises I think behind the large MOOCs as well is that when MIT gives away their video lectures for free or Princeton or Harvard, again, education is not about the information. If students can call up any detail that's in their textbooks on their smartphones in an instant for free, they can do that. So it's not about the information. It's about what we do with the information. It's about where we take the information, how we think about the information. So again, I think when we frame it in terms of what the purpose is and as a service to the discipline, as a way to give back, then I think it's an easier argument for people to digest.
Thank you. Are there any other questions out there? I guess I'm not hearing any at this time. I really just want to thank you, Rajiv, for telling this great story and really for being as I think Brian noted, a wonderful advocate. And I think we need to have you out there speaking more. And I hope you can join us for more of these chats or other events around Open Ed.
Oh, just thank you. It's my pleasure. I was just typing this as you were talking, but it's really a privilege, and I feel somewhat foolish that I didn't know more about the open education movement before. So my gratitude goes to TRU for hosting David Wiley and to BC Campus and everybody else I've already mentioned.
So Brian, do you want to take over and talk about some of the neat stuff happening at TRU?
Yeah, just a couple things that people have asked me about, and also too, I guess one of the thing is there's a few people I see here that are involved with another initiative around talking about perhaps collaborating on open platforms. So I may get to that as well. But I realize I'm what stands between, at least for people here in British Columbia, this chat and going for lunch. So I'll try to be brief. But I did want to note we had a really exciting event. Here at TRU before Christmas, which was the official launch of the Open Educational Resources Universitas, which actually for a long time, I think when we actually launched, it was called the OER University. My understanding is just to avoid any confusion that this is in itself an actual university, they've changed the name to reflect its nature as actually a consortium of universities. And one of the things that kind of came up at this meeting, maybe just to back up a little bit, if you take a look at the website, which I posted in the text chat, there's a few things that are really interesting about this consortium and organization. One is it really does represent a very global initiative. It's a little bit weighted to Australia and New Zealand, and that's perhaps not surprising because Wayne McIntosh, who's kind of the if there was a single driving force behind OERU, Wayne would definitely be among them. Many of us may remember Wayne from when he was working for Commonwealth of Learning based in Vancouver, which I suspect is why there are three organizations from British Columbia as well part of it. Wayne's one of those people, if you spend time with him, it's hard not to be struck by his conviction
and his integrity and deep knowledge of open education. He's got a real vision, which kind of goes to the other piece, a couple pieces of OERU that I think are truly distinct. One is, Rajiv was kind of alluding to how, say, things like MOOCs have become conflated with open education. And not to go into too much tiresome detail, but there's some questions, at least among the so-called ex-MOOCs and kind of the ones that make it into the major media stories of, you know, whether these things truly represent something open. OERU is, one might level criticisms towards the towards this initiative, but I think a lack of transparency is not one of them. Its roots are in WikiEducator, and you can go to the WikiEducator site, and one of the things that's kind of remarkable, if you go to the OERU section of the WikiEducator site, is you will see meeting minutes and planning documents and pretty much every piece of activity that's happened in this consortium since it was kind of conceived a couple of years ago, right up into and beyond the official launch we had in December. It definitely practices what it preaches in terms of transparency. There really isn't a behind closed doors dimension to what's there. And although, and I'll get to some of the benefits of being an OERU member in a minute, really, because its commitment to open is so thorough, it's one of those things that it's quite easy for people to sample and explore and kind of get into the network without necessarily becoming a full anchor partner. The other piece that I kind of think is, and I think what is a real value proposition, although there's still work to be done for it, is that the OERU consortium partners, in addition to building out a set of courses that will essentially make up the components of a Bachelor of General Studies or equivalent, depending where you are, degree program, once these courses are built out, is a actual commitment to offer credit for these courses. Now, in most cases, I don't think the credit itself will be provided necessarily for free. The courses themselves will be free. But one thing that's interesting is that many of the partners have frameworks in place to offer credit in ways that, I guess, just to use an imprecise term, that are non-traditional. Just to give an example, here at TRU in Open Learning, we have a very well-rendered and very busy prior learning and assessment and recognition group that provides credit through many means of alternate assessment that are quite rigorous and usually involve faculty assessment. So there is a fee attached to that, but it's generally quite a bit less than what would be associated with tuition, full tuition for a course. So, you know, what you start to see if you look at the potential of the organization, and I think you can kind of see it on the site, is certainly the outlines of a pretty diverse set of course offerings from a really interesting set of institutional partners, a truly global initiative, one that is definitely got a very progressive and open cast to how it delivers teaching and learning, but also to its governance, and is really trying to wrestle quite pragmatically with issues of providing recognition and credit for these. So that's how it stands now. Now, there's obviously a lot of work to do on all of those things. We've just launched these courses, so people are beginning to take them. I know we've had just started to have instances, for example, where we're sending TRU Open Learning students to the offerings from OERU partners and using them essentially to round out our degree offerings in a way that's inexpensive and very convenient for the students. So in this interim step, we're starting to see that. Obviously, there's still work to be done in terms of building out the course offerings, in terms of, you know, we still haven't pushed students through a degree program and provided a degree yet. So there's going to be, there's work to be done.
But I have to say, I went into the meetings in December, although I'd, been on the periphery of Wiki Educator for many years and taken part in seminars and known many of the people who participated in both Wiki Educator and OERU, it still was a real revelation to have these people from around the world. And the degree of commitment was quite remarkable, and the quality of discussion was really good. We have a really good media team here at TRU Open Learning, and they just did a absolutely stellar job of professionally live streaming the entire meeting, which again speaks to that commitment to transparency I was referring to, and that's all been archived. So if you want to sit through, 14 hours of meetings and discussions, I would I would encourage it. And as Paul noted, the quality really was remarkable. It was kind of like watching the parliamentary channel or something, like the people jumping from speaker to speaker. And it was a really nice showcase for our media team. I noticed that that Paul is on the chat. I don't want to put him on the spot. I should have given him a heads up, but I thought I would just at least invite him if he wants to offer his own thoughts. Paul's in an interesting position because he was obviously one of the real founders of OERU, and I know he was a very active participant, and then he's moved on to Creative Commons, and in many ways his role is still, very critical and active, but he's also got a certain, I think, distance and independence to it, and had a lot of interesting thoughts to offer. So Paul, if you want to maintain your radio silence, that's fine, but I'll pause for a moment and maybe invite you to offer your thoughts. If not, I'll move on.
I'm not sure if my mic is working. So let me just see here. It is? Okay. Great. So it was a delight to be at Thompson Rivers University, and of course it's always good to see an initiative like that that has taken several years to get its feet on the ground, formally launch. And so I think that, at least from my perspective, OERU is positioned in an interesting way, partly because of its incredible openness, as Brian has described, but also it is a very unique initiative with the extent of the partner base that it has coalesced around using open education resources, and the commitment to build those out into full credentials is another unique aspect to their initiative. I think that if I had a concern about what is transpiring, it's just around the rigor and experience that a student might get with the learning that's being offered and the extent to which that includes a social component. I think that we see too much of the online learning offerings being provided in a kind of self-paced autonomous format, which I think of as very old school online learning. And so the challenge, of course, with the OERU initiative is to try to offer something that is free or incredibly low cost, while at the same time providing, a highly effective method of teaching and learning. And I see that as its ultimate challenge going forward. I think that there is a very compelling story with the OERU that is very much in contrast to the MOOC story. I think that Wayne McIntosh is doing an amazing job of leading that initiative and has the insight, I think, to kind of bring all of the challenges under the tent and engage everyone in solving them in an effective manner. I guess the other thing that I'll just maybe say lastly, Brian, is that and I bet you can attest to this too, I certainly heard lots of stories along these lines, and that is that it's actually hard work to kind of take what is already out there in the form of open education resources, and in the case of OERU, kind of rework them into some kind of format and some kind of pathway that can lead to a credential, and do so in a way that is going to be thought of as high quality and be thought of as worthy of awarding credentials to. It's not simple. I think there are a lot of moving parts, and it's a challenge to coordinate as broad a network as has already formed around the OERU to tackle that collectively.
Yeah, I can certainly attest to that. And thank you, Paul. You're one of those people I know I can throw on the spot, and you'll always be so eloquent and lucid. And yeah, I mean, as you alluded to, there's definitely some real hard work to be done. And you noted the developing something that feels like a genuinely rich and engaged higher education experience when you're looking at it being disaggregated and delivered in this way is definitely a challenge. But I guess maybe to close up along that lines and acknowledging the hard work there in terms of building this out, I mean, to me, what's undoubtedly been a value for TRU to be part of this consortium, and I think it would be for the partners, Kwantlen and BC Campus as well, you know, the barrier to entry is very low. I mean, I think the cost to join even as a full anchor partner is you know, about not a whole lot more than it costs to send someone to travel to an international conference. And you're committing to developing two courses in the open. But again, that's, I think, is a very useful thing to have. Essentially, what I guess I'm saying is I see the participation in OERU as a really important strategic driver. So the fact that we kind of have this external public commitment that we're making to build open courses, it's really forced us to think in those terms. So how are we going to build these open courses? What tools are we going to use? And it's proven to be very useful in terms of pushing the conversation of openness here at TRU. So it was very exciting to see the presidents of both Kwantlen and TRU at the meeting and participating, you know, really, really with real engagement. So it's been a really interesting experience, and I've learned a lot. I was going to talk a bit more about, I was going to switch a little bit at the end too, and it was just because I'd been talking with Will about a series of workshops I had done last term around the idea of video camp and things like that. I don't think we have time to get into that at this. I'll just post some notes from the just launched TRU wiki space. Oh, I see Mary. Okay, I should get back to this. Mary Burgess noted that there is going to be an OERU event at Kwantlen March 10th, which I should get up to speed on because I don't know about it. Thanks, Mary. I'll just post the link to, this is actually just some very loose notes that I used for a presentation to a class. Just a short version, there's been some really fun and exciting stuff happening at TRU, working with instructors here on kind of integrating digital storytelling into the classroom, and in particular some English and literature classrooms, and also just kind of doing skills-based training for audio and video work, and seeing instructors and administrators and people like that using those skills to do things and doing it on the open web. So maybe that'll be another time, but I see we're pushing up to noon, so if anyone is interested in that stuff, that's fine. I guess one other thing I just want to note too is we've kind of had this on again, off again discussion about collaborating on platforms for open education. I know there's a few people on this session who are already on the list or I've already contacted. I will be sending around a request to set up a conference call, likely under the BCNet umbrella. To begin, if I haven't already spoken with you and invited you, consider yourself invited if you're interested in participating. Essentially, looking at ways for institutions who want to use tools that can exploit the open web more effectively to share resources and maybe even pool resources to deliver something a little better than what we're capable of doing in kind of the more atomized format. So I think that's enough talking for me. I see it's noon. Will, do you have anything to say before we sign off, or anybody else?
No, I just wanted to thank everyone. But I did want to quickly note that the next chat is scheduled for February 14th, Valentine's Day. On the website that has the information. There is a link to a open Google Doc if you, anybody wants to add anything to the agenda for that talk. If there's any projects or other news you want to highlight, please do.
Great. Well, thanks everyone for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you all.